most American Jewry share our views rather than the right wing. So I think it is our job to show them that there is political NGO, etc. camp in Israel that is actually fighting for these values and needs their support, their support and cooperation. And I think both the money, but also the engagement, the mutual interest to be able to share our values and share the future of Israel that we would all like to see. I think this is something that can give hope to many, many people both here and there.
Welcome to Partners for Progressive Israel's podcast. I am your host, Maya Haber. Today we spoke with Knesset member Tami Zandberg. Tami began her political career in 2003 when she started working as parliamentary assistant to Meretz MK, Ran Cohen. In 2008, she was elected to Tel Aviv City Council, where she continued working for social justice. She was elected to the Knesset in 2013 and then again in 2015, and has been an advocate for sustainable transportation, social environmental justice, and urban renewal. Tami has an amazing social justice record. In this conversation, she tells us how conservative American Jews influence Israeli politics by investing in think tanks and social media campaigns, and why the NGO law pretended to promise transparency for all foreign support to Israeli NGOs, but in reality allows the conservative camp to continue without interruption influencing Israeli politics while targeting money going to progressive organizations. I hope you enjoy the conversation. I want to start by asking you a question about the social protest. 5 years ago, in the summer of 2011, Israelis hit the street to voice their discontent with the intolerable cost of living. For a while there, it seemed like the country was united against the government's neoliberal policies. How would you evaluate the response of the government to the protest? What has it done to reduce prices, and how effective has it been?
2011, there have already been two Knessets, two governments, that were elected merely on the basis of the economy, and specifically in the prices of living in general, but I can say it was specifically the prices of housing that were in the heart of the social protest and in the two election campaigns in the two governments, both of them led by Netanyahu, one of them with the Minister of Finance, Yair Lapid, in 2013, and the other one with the current Minister of Finance, Moshe Kahlon, from the Kulanu party, which is a new party. So I can say that in general, I think the government is planning many small moves that are not significantly being felt by the Israelis. In general, I cannot say the economic situation has improved in the last 5 years. Recently, in the last year, they are very, very aggressive steps in the housing market. One of them, I think the flag move by Moshe Kahlon, the Minister of Finance, is what is called Mechir LaMishtaken. It's like some kind of a discount, like a subsidy that the government gives for young families to buy houses. It is being described in the economic newspaper media as something very, very small that has no significant impact on the market in a whole, and also has many money problems. For example, families who win a lottery that you can enter, and if you win it, you can buy the house in the reduced price, but then you cannot get a mortgage from the bank, even if you won the government lottery, because either you don't have the minimum, you know, criteria for the mortgage, or the house is too expensive for you still, etc. So I can say that it is in debate. I mean, people talk about it all the time. What are the moves that the government is planning? But there is no significant feeling that something is actually happening, that people feel it in their pocket in the end of the month. And as you know, the energy policy, especially the natural gas issue, was a huge issue in the last year. And here I can say that the government, while energy prices were reduced a little, like in a certain degree in Israel, it didn't match the drop in energy prices globally. And one of the reasons is a monopoly over the natural gas and electricity production. And while electricity is a governmental monopoly, which can be understood because it is an infrastructure, you know, capacity, the natural gas monopoly is a private one. So actually the government, in the end of the day, gave the responsibility for a natural resource to the hands of a few, two or three corporations, and the energy prices are not going down, even though they should have. And that's one of the issues in the natural gas that we are trying to fight for and argue that prices should have been reduced more. And of course, it has a lot to do with the prices of living. But in the end of the day, it wasn't being felt, at least not significantly.
In a recent Facebook post that I translated and our audience can find on Partners for Progressive Israel's website, you wrote that while the vast majority of Israeli citizens living within the legal territory of Israel face antisocial policies, have to deal daily with cutbacks in state services and privatization, the settlers are living in a welfare state. They receive special funding and tax benefits from their friends in the Knesset. What would you say is the cost of the West Bank settlement project to the Israeli economy?
The recent steps are, we can of course measure them. This week, Bezalel Smotrich, what I was talking about, is something about 100 million shekels in tax equivalent. So it's not like it doesn't cost, but it's a, you know, it's a tax benefit. A few weeks back, the government approved another benefit in the 70 million worth. Of this was actually budget that was being distributed from different government offices to give like summer camps in the settlements and all these kinds of other policy, you know, steps. So it's just 170 million shekels over the last, let's say, two or three weeks. But that's, of course, it doesn't stand in any equivalent to the entire settlement project that has been thriving in the West Bank in the last 50 years, or, well, the occupation is 50 years, but let's say in the last 40 years since the first settlement in Gush Emunim, and it's been growing since, and it is getting, you know, on my way here to take this call, I got a new, you know, push notification from the Haaretz site that the U.S. government condemns the Israeli government for its policy that is very, very pro-settlement this term, and as they said, provocatively undermines the two-state solution. That is a quote, and I think it's a very severe expression from the U.S. government, and this goes to tell you what is this government's policy. Over the years, there has been a few attempts to measure the entire amount of money that being spent. Of course, over the 40 years, we're talking about billions and billions and billions of dollars or shekels. Actually, it's very hard to measure because some of it is being hided inside security budget and various different money from different ministers is going there, transportation, housing, etc. But, you know, it is, I think the point that we are that I want to stress right now is the discrimination and the unequal policy that the settlements are getting. If you compare them, of course, to the Palestinian villages in the West Bank, and over there, it's like, you know, it's a dual system. It's not, it's like two states in one territory. And that is when there is no two-state solution, of course. So it's like, you know, it's the same regime, but totally different policy. Of course, one is military, one is civil, but also economically very, very, very different without any comparison. But also the discrimination and the gap between the Israeli Jewish settlement in the West Bank and the Israeli Jewish settlement in sovereign Israel that is growing. You know, the education system is much more, you know, less children in a classroom. More school buses to drive the children to school, longer hours, almost any welfare criteria you will take, you will find that the settlements are being overprivileged if you compare it to Israel.
The Israeli left has been gradually losing the support of the public. Where do you see hope? How are you planning to reconstruct it?
You know, a lot of people right now in the left feel that we have no political support, and basically that the Israeli public has got used to this situation that has been going on for decades, or it doesn't care. And people just don't care. And, you know, as I mentioned, the last two election campaigns, even though we had another war in Gaza in the summer of 2014, but still both the 2013 and 2015 elections evolved around issues of economy rather than the political conflict. In the same time, I think it is not necessarily so. I mean, this feeling is maybe a little bit biased, because I do feel there is a lot of discontent from the government. And, you know, I think the most vocal voice in the last elections was Rak Lo Bibi in Hebrew. Give us anyone but Bibi, because people are really fed up, both with Prime Minister Netanyahu personally, but also with the right-wing policy that he's been leading here, and is getting more and more extreme. And I think this government is the most right-wing, the most extreme right-wing government, I think, in the history of Israel. I think it wouldn't be exaggerated to describe it that way. And I think people do feel that they want to change. Of course, in our camp, and I remind you, the last election, we did lose. It was a very painful loss, but it was a close loss. So it wasn't like, you know, we didn't lose like 70-30 or something like that. It was very, very close, and a lot of people felt there is hope for political change. I think in the same time, people maybe in the mainstream, you know, maybe that describe themselves politically as center, maybe even center-right leaning, but not very extreme right, feel a little bit stuck, because Prime Minister Netanyahu doesn't seem to have someone to replace him. So they either don't vote, or they vote something else, or they vote to Likud and Netanyahu because they feel, don't hate him, you know, that much, but they feel there is no substitution and no one else. And I think this is our biggest challenge as a camp. I'm not talking only on behalf of Meretz. I think the Meretz role in this arena, in this political, you know, theater, is to be the left-wing anchor, to be very, very sharp and precise in our positions, to point on all these situations of discrimination, of bias toward the settlement, toward what is the price of not having peace, how much violence it gets us, the racism, and everything that is going on, and be very, very vocal and sharp about it. And the role of others in the camp is to extract more support from the center and right, so we can actually have another, a center left or a left-leaning government. And I personally don't share the desperation and the feeling that we are alone there, we are the only ones feeling that way, and we have no support. I think Meretz was always a more left-leaning, a more radical, a more, you know, on the side of the main party in our camp. You know, this is not a bipartisan system, so there are always someone to the left or to the right of the government party that is part of the government, like, for example, the Jewish Home or Beit HaYehudi today, who is to the right of the Likud, but is very, very influential and very, very has a call, you know. And I think maybe the most dominant component of the government, even though it is only 8 seats. I think this is the role that Meretz has to take in a wider camp that has a joint mission of a political change. So I think it's not about how many people support Meretz. Of course, there need to be more in order for us to succeed, but really, the mission is for us is to draw the entire map to the left in order to affect the center. So in other words, you know, the stronger the left is, the more left the center is. And this is our role. A little bit like what, you know, the candidacy of Bernie Sanders did. Well, he didn't win, and I'm not sure someone thought he would, but he definitely affected the entire democratic discourse to be more left-leaning. And I think that is something that in the end of the day was beneficial to everybody, including Hillary Clinton now being nominated. And I must say, personally, as a woman, that I found it very, very exciting and historic. So
here in the U.S., conservative Jews are active on all things Israel. They flood money to settlements, think tanks, and media organizations. They equate Israel with Netanyahu and alienate everyone who would like to support Israel but objects to Netanyahu's policies. And they're winning. Progressive Jews are gradually disengaging with Israel. They feel that Israel does not represent their values anymore. And they know relatively little about the Israeli left. What do you think we can do about this?
I can tell you that we definitely feel the American Jewry right in Israel. We feel the donations. Of course, we feel Sheldon Adelson, for example. This is maybe the most prominent, you know, example. But we also feel both the right-wing money through the right-wing net of NGOs that are websites that are very, very active in, you know, in incitement against the left and going after the NGOs, the left-wing politicians, etc. We also feel it in policymaking. So we feel the influence of the big money that goes to politicians, of course, like Bibi Netanyahu, but also Gilad Erdan, Yariv Levin, Ayelet Shaked, all of them senior ministers in the right-wing government. I think the best example is the NGO law that went after governmental money that comes especially from Europe, from governments that have diplomatic relations with Israel and are friendly to Israel, whereas the money from private donors was kept out, mainly because the government money comes to the right, to the left-wing NGOs, whereas the private money goes to the right-wing NGOs, and this goes especially from the U.S. So we definitely feel the influence of it in Israeli society. I can tell you that I feel there is a growing understanding in the left that two things. First of all, that of course there is a left and is very vital and very crucial right now in Israel, both politically and in the NGO and, you know, the surrounding arena. And of course I think we have to cooperate and coordinate more between the bodies. And I think maybe directly to a question, that there is a growing understanding how important money can be that comes to in organizations like Partners for Progressive Israel and others that Partners for Progressive Israel is cooperating with, especially in the U.S., of course, J Street, NIS, etc., that can direct the money to where it is most needed in Israel and in Israeli, you know, civil society to actually make a difference. But I think that we are actually growingly understanding together as a camp how we should work and how we should coordinate the political and NGO and Jewish money directed. And then I think it can be a real breakthrough, because then the feeling you're talking about, that the right wing is very devoted and, you know, directed in its goals, and the left wing is growingly detached and desperate. If we give them a goal or a cause that is both just and goes in the same line with our mutual values and can be potentially effective, I think people will start growingly re-engage in the issue, because people are getting detached because they feel, you know, the country, the Israel that they love and, you know, come from Zionism, and they want to learn about it and educate their children, and Judaism and Israel, etc., is growingly getting further and further away from what we believe in. So we don't want anything to do with it. So this is our job. And most American Jewry, if you count the votes, share our views rather than the right wing. So I think it is our job to show them that there is political NGO, etc., camp in Israel that is actually fighting for these values and needs their support, their support and cooperation. And I think, you know, both the money that you mentioned, but also the engagement, the mutual interest to be able to share our values and share the future of Israel that we would all like to see, I think this is something that can give hope to many, many people, both here and there. So it's from both sides of the ocean is potentially, you know, it's really a hopeful and promising thing to do.
You speak about conservative money intervening in Israeli politics. If you were in our shoes and you wanted to counter that from an American progressive perspective, what kind of organizations would you support in Israel right now? What are the organizations that you currently think have the most, are most needed for Israel in a progressive direction?
I think that there are several initiatives right now that can be good candidates for that. Personally, I think that what is most needed right now is a very, very, is support for a very clear and sharp left-wing voice that will change the atmosphere around politics, not just because you can't give money to politics, because you can't, this is the Israeli election law, but also because what we're fighting many times is the surrounding atmosphere in the media, in the right wing, especially in the right wing campaigns. And as I mentioned before, they have a very organized network of think tanks and NGOs and websites that are seemingly news, like right wing news websites, but are actually meant in distributing the right-wing, you know, ideas and agendas and et cetera. And I think that we should have a similar voice in that is aimed at changing the surrounding public opinion and affecting what is happening, you know, in websites, in different campaigns that we then reach to the mainstream media, et cetera. And I think there actually are at least one or two initiatives that are starting right now that I can, there are some places that I think we can benefit from the most. And again, most of them go into changing public opinion around left-wing agenda and ideas. This is the umbrella principle that I see that is most needed. And I'm talking about distributing and campaigning for the ideas. So we know what our agenda is, but we have to push it harder in order to be more visible in public opinion, in the press, in the public discourse where people are talking about, in, you know, in working places, in family dinners, etc.
What do you think your role is merits in Israel to help American Jews, progressive Jews, re-engage with Israel? And how do you think we can work on this together?
Our role in what kind of message we deliver to our supporters and to American Jewry and our supporters in the U.S. and internationally in general is by saying Israel is not just the Israeli government. Israel is a vital, crucial, important, and just political camp that is the Israeli left, that should win elections in Israel and should lead a different policy towards peace and social justice and justice in a whole. And our mutual support should be in you knowing and supporting and backing us here in Israel and, of course, us backing and supporting and dialoguing with you over there to convey our message that, of course, there is Israel that we love and we want to change and we want to see it, you know, peace-seeking and pluralist and democratic and show justice. And, you know, it's not between Americans and Israelis. It's between right-wingers on both societies and between the progressive democratic forces in both sides. So this is us. And I think this is the message, the best message that we have to deliver to all the people that are asking themselves, what is going on with Israel and how can we affect? And then they're asking themselves, is our best effect or influence would be by boycotting, by, you know, immigrating to Israel? I don't know what. So our message is, you know, look at us, support us, make the dialogue with us, because we are the camp that is the promising future of Israel.
You've been listening to Knesset member Tami Zandberg, brought to you by Partners for Progressive Israel. Find out more about Partners for Progressive Israel at progressiveisrael.org. Subscribe to our podcast on iTunes and support us by recommending this podcast to your friends. This is your host, Maya Haber. I hope you enjoyed the podcast.